Good morning, I'm Tommy Helm, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International from the studios of KBZT, FM 94.9 in San Diego. Tree Huggers International is a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program dedicated to the preservation of parks, wilderness, and special places. From the beaches to the mountains to the deserts, this is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. A strange thing began happening about 20 years ago. Kids stopped going outside. The volume of kids making time to go outdoors and play is now far smaller than it used to be. And when many of us were kids, our parents pretty much needed a hook to rope us back inside at the end of the day. However, job demands and parent schedules have grown increasingly busy over the years, and video games and television have increasingly grown as babysitters. And over time, a misplaced culture of fear about the outdoors began to take hold, the results partially of irresponsible media and sometimes hyperactive parenting. The outdoors began to be seen not as a place of wonder and experience and fun and healthy exercise, but as a place of danger and threat. A place to be avoided, where snakes and bears lurk beneath rocks and behind trees. Now, granted, there are dangers inherent in the outdoors like anywhere else, and while organizations like Scouting and other outlets continue to offer safe ways for kids to learn about the outdoors and the wild with map and compass training and camping skills, which tangibly bolster kids' sense of accomplishment and self-worth, many kids, unfortunately, experience the outdoors today through the culture of extremes. Extreme sports, in which the outdoors aren't something to be enjoyed or a place to find peace and solace, but a place to be conquered, to be vanquished, with little opportunity for reflection beyond boasting. Joining us today is Dr. Ann Fagey, the co-founder and chair of the San Diego Children and Nature Collaborative. Dr. Fagey previously served as the forest supervisor of the Cleveland National Forest, and she served as a botany research associate with the San Diego Natural History Museum and helped start the San Diego Audubon Society's Outdoor Explore program, which provides nature walks for after-school programs. Janice Swaysgood is also with us. Janice Swaysgood is the co-founder of Family Adventures in Nature, and she serves on the National Advisory Board for the Children and Nature Network and is on the Let's Go, as in Get Outside, Oversight Committee, and is the co-chair of the San Diego Children and Nature Collaborative. And our old friend David McDonald is joining us again. David is the founder and president of the Adventure 16 Donate a Pack Foundation, and he previously served as the regional coordinator for the American Hiking Society, helping to bring the first National Trails Day to San Diego before beginning the Donate a Pack Foundation in 1997. And Janice, David, it is great to have you here. Welcome to Tree Huggers International.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
You know, I'm blaming TV and video games in my opening remarks about kids and the outdoors, and I realize that's probably simplifying things a bit. Could you talk more about what has happened in our culture over the years and why kids don't get outdoors like they used to play or fish?
There are some real common barriers that families and parents face daily. One of them you mentioned is the pull of electronic media. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. It's a matter of keeping things in balance. Another barrier is, you also mentioned fear, fear of the outdoors, fear of the unknown, fear of strangers. Our media today tends to focus on the negative, scary things that happen, and statistics don't matter when it's your child that you're talking about. Violent crimes, and particularly crimes against children, have gone down since the 1960s. However, you know, I've got two young children myself, and I always feel safer when I go out in a group.
A lot of the stuff that you read about in the newspapers and on the internet are typically about people that had encounters, say, with a bear, or maybe got bit by a rattlesnake and had to get life flight. And so people automatically think that's all there is out there. You have to be aware of that. But that is so far and few between isolated incidents. And typically, in some cases, the people who got attacked possibly or got bitten just weren't aware enough of where what to do when they're out there and so forth. So it's all about education and being familiar with the natural world out there and some of the predators and creatures that's their home.
That's their home, yeah.
That's their home.
What are some of the tangible or even quantifiable benefits kids enjoy when they're able to spend time outdoors playing or even just exploring or daydreaming?
Yeah, research shows that children are happier, healthier, and smarter when they spend time learning in nature and playing outdoors. Nature play increases self-esteem. It improves psychological health. For a lot of kids, there's that downtime that reduces their stress. Children are more cooperative. They play in groups very differently than when they have toys that have a certain way of operating. Nature doesn't have that way of operating, and children must be creative and must interact as it unfolds for them. Children are healthier. It improves physical conditioning, reduces the trend of obesity by just having kids be much more active during the day, and also active because they want to be and they're driven out to explore or to spend time with other children. And they also develop lifelong habits of fitness and recreation, the kind of thing that the Donate a Pack Foundation also works with, which is how do we get young people to really enjoy the outdoor recreation in the same way that we and many generations before us did. And then children are smarter. There's good research behind children in schools, when they're in that outdoor setting, learn with all of the senses. So children that aren't necessarily just picking up things by reading are picking them up by listening or by interacting or by feeling. It stimulates creativity, where we can teach art, we can teach writing in nature. And then children learn to care for nature, and they get a sense of the world around them. And it's a tangible way for them to understand that they're part of something larger than themselves, that nature is part of their genetic makeup as well as our socialization and a large part of the future that we're going to have to live better in nature.
Yeah, and you spent a lot of time working with the Forest Service. That was your career for many, many years. Did you notice over the years you were working for the Forest Service back east and elsewhere a change in the activities that kids were pursuing?
Nationally, the participation in some of the structured activities, camping, fishing, have gone down. Other activities have gone up. Photography and the watchable wildlife has gone up. Families are no longer taking the types of vacations they might have taken in the, say, 50 years ago, where they all got in a station wagon and went around. But the recreation near where people live has increased. So going out for 3 or 4 days as family camping has stayed constant.
Would it be reasonable to suggest adults don't have the time they did in years past to spend with their kids taking those types of vacations or going camping or going hiking?
Definitely. Overscheduling is a very common problem that many families face. Not only the parent schedules, but you've also got things like organized sports, music lessons, second language lessons. Overscheduling is another very common barrier to getting out. And we all want the best for our children. We want them to have the best of everything. We want to utilize every little part of their brain. And by doing that, sometimes we lose sight of how busy we're getting them. And I think it's equally important, if not more important, that we also teach our children to keep a balance in their lives so that they have downtime and they have just unstructured time to be.
As a parent, Janice, mm-hmm. How do you stay aware of that? How do you make sure you're not scheduling too many things? Are you making sure that your children have time to relax or just imagine outside?
It's something that's very much on the forefront of my husband and my minds. It's something that we talk about frequently, and we're lucky enough for me to be home. We have made the necessary sacrifices for me to be home with our boys so that we're able to guarantee that they do have unstructured time every day for play outside in our backyard or in our canyon or any nearby nature that we can get them into. The majority of their free time is spent in nature.
TV has had a big impact on American culture since the end of World War II. I'm curious as to what you think about the impact of computers and video games affecting Americans in terms of their relationship with the outdoors, not just kids, but Americans. Anne, do you have any thoughts on that?
There's a new Kaiser Foundation study that shows that children are spending 40 to 60 hours a week attached to some kind of electronic media, whether it's television, their iPhone, or their computer. That's like 6-7 hours a day. Or more, and sometimes they're engaged in more than one media at the same time. So when you've substituted, then this is non-school time, so in addition to school, there's not much left. There's not time for sleep. There's not time for a family dinner together. And I think we underestimate how much children lose by not having the time with families. it's really important to help young families realize that what they get out of spending time, maybe just sitting in the backyard while the kids are playing for an hour, or going on a walk on a Saturday instead of going to a movie or the mall, that time also gives the parents something. They get a chance to be slower. They get a chance to get away from the electronic media, and they feel the benefits of it immediately as well. And so sometimes it's just helping families to do that. And actually, Janice has been leading some groups called Family Nature Clubs that have been helping families do that and kind of learn to go back, so that we're really bringing both children and the generation of 20 and 30-somethings into nature contacts.
My husband and I, as you mentioned in the introduction, founded a family nature club, local nature club. Our ultimate goal is to help more families connect to nature, because we see the benefits of it for our kids. It's something we were already doing when we read Richard Loof's book, Last Child in the Woods. That kind of prompted us, and we saw it as a call to action for our family. Since it's something that we love to do so much anyway, we felt that we should be sharing that, and so we formally started the group. One of the main ideas is to get nature back on people's calendars, and that helps them maintain that balance. If it's kind of like a gym buddy, you know, if you have something on the calendar, you're meeting someone there, be it another family in the club or just that you've RSVP'd and said that you're going to go, you're more likely to go and follow through and do it. People have thanked us, even if they don't come to every outing, because they certainly couldn't, the number of outings that we offer through our nearby nature clubs, they still are getting constant ideas of where to go and what to do, and that it's keeping it on the forefront for them, so it is something that is more in their minds, and they're going out more on their own as well.
How does the U.S. stack up against other similar nations in terms of time kids spend outdoors? I realize you may not have any quantifiable data in front of you, but
more than half of the world now lives in cities, so it's very much of a question that would be maybe more relevant to where people's place is as opposed to the country they are. Countries that still have people living in rural places, of course, are spending more time outdoors. Many of our immigrants had that in their background, and we see things like the local food network, local community gardens are really a demand by folks who grew up, or their ancestors, recent ancestors, grew up in more rural farming settings. And many in our generation, it's several generations since it was, quote, on the farm. And so it's farther away. There aren't grandparents to visit and such. So that's why it becomes much more important for us to cherish and manage the places that we do have that are nearby nature. And in San Diego, it's not going out to a farm unless you take a day out to Valley Center, but it's going on a walk in the neighborhood into your nearby canyon, going down to Tecolote, maybe going along the San Diego River. We're really fortunate in that most people live within a 10 or 15 minute walk from an open space area in San Diego. And there's actually just a study that was done of accessibility of various populations to nature. And some of our inner cities have less availability than some of our, certainly our East County areas. And so there's quite a bit of difference. And the challenge will be to make sure that all have that accessibility and can get to nature, can take a bus to nature. So your question about how much the U.S. compares, I think worldwide we're seeing a lot of these same trends, and we may be addressing them differently. There are some preschools in the Scandinavian countries where the children are outdoors all except for, you know, a restroom break and driving home in the car. And they literally have preschool or early childhood years in snow and rain and learning to be outdoors. And there's some examples in the United States also where schools have been able to say that their recess time can be outdoors. So there's some models for it. And in this economy, we're going to be looking for models that don't take a lot of money, and local nearby nature and school-based gardens and natural habitats are things we can do.
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International, broadcast from the studios of KBZT FM 94.9 in San Diego. I'm Tommy Howe, and we're joined in the studio by Dr. Ann Feggy, the co-founder and chair of the San Diego Children and Nature Collaborative. Janice Swaysgood is here, the co-founder of Family Adventures in Nature. And David McDonald is also here, the founder and president of the Adventure 16 Donate a Pack Foundation. We're talking about kids in the outdoors and the benefits which kids enjoy from time spent outside, including a sense of accomplishment and a sense of a building, as well as the idea they are part of something bigger than all of us, the natural world on planet Earth. Now, the website for the San Diego Children and Nature Collaborative, that is sdchildrenandnature.org. www.sdchildrenandnature.org. The website for Family Adventures in Nature is www.familyadventuresinnature.org. familyadventuresinnature.org. And the website for the Adventure 16 Donate a Pack Foundation, which was featured on a previous edition of Tree Huggers International, giving new life to old gear, is donateapack.org. That's www.donateapack.org. Obviously, Richard Louv's book, Last Child in the Woods, had a huge impact on this understanding of children and the outdoors. And I was wondering if you could talk a little more, Dr. Feggie, about that impact and that connection Richard Louv made.
Louv's book really touched people in a very different way than a lot of our nature education or environmental education had done over the past 50 years. And so I look at it, I've been involved professionally with environmental education in various ways for probably 40 years, and environmental education has been quality programs over the years, but many times it has not been the most important thing that educators or administrators have wanted to see children experience. So what you talked about in the fact that we all of a sudden realize how children are spending less time learning in nature and playing outdoors, Richard Louv captured that notion, and he's a wonderful storyteller and lecturer, and he also brings a sense of hope to this is what it's going to take to build the future. And his new book called The Nature Principle builds on that as well. But his book was out about 6 months before the Inconvenient Truth movie. And it's my personal take on it that at the point at which we realized as a nation in the U.S., about 10 years behind Europe, but nevertheless, through Inconvenient Truth, that climate change is scientifically undisputable and real, that people are looking, we're all looking for a sense of hope and what we can do in our own lives and collectively. And that's where I believe part of that hopefulness and the things that we can do by ourselves and with children really touched people. And Richard, instead of going on to another book, said there's something here and helped organize that nationally, what's called the Children and Nature Network.
And just adding on to that a bit, I know that Richard Louv's book, Last Child in the Woods, has been translated into a number of languages, I think in the teens. And the movement itself has sprung up in Australia, has a huge movement in the Children and Nature movement, in addition to our national movement. I know that there are things happening in Scotland also, Germany. Just thinking about the Children and Nature Network, they have a site that is an interactive site where people go on and blog and whatnot, and there are people really from all over the world in there.
What's great about what Richard was talking about, when you compare that to concerns about climate change and large-scale, genuine environmental concerns, can seem rather daunting to the average person. The way that you address these large-scale concerns almost seems to be intangible, out of reach, whereas connecting kids with nature seems to be something, well, that's easy. I can do that. I can volunteer. I can take kids out in a tour of a canyon or a forest.
Or I can take my own children out, or I can be a nature advocate and help the teachers take children out a couple times a year from their classrooms. There are many ways that children can have that opportunity to learn in nature and play outdoors. And so we're really looking at contributing to changes in San Diego where we expect children to go back to spending time in nature like they had 30 to 50 years ago.
Not only that, but children need to understand. I mean, you know, you go into a second or a fourth grade classroom and there might be a big unit on saving the rainforest. Whereas if kids don't understand what's going on in their own backyard, they don't understand the habitat that's around them, the plants and the animals, that's too abstract of a concept for them. And they need to first understand and love what's there and become a part of it and have it become a sense of who they are as well. And then they'll come back. This is where our future big stewards of nature are going to come from. Our future environmental caretakers are beginning right now.
There's a concept called the sense of agency, where you want children to believe that they can affect the future. They can be contributing citizens. And you start that really early on as a two-year-old, but also as a first or second grader. And the sense of agency needs to be something where they can actually contribute. So if you tell a second grader that the ice sheets are melting and the polar bears are drowning, they can't do anything about it, and they're actually quite fearful of it, as opposed to taking a second grader and saying, okay, how do we help to water the tomato plants, and then we're going to have them for lunch, or we're going to bring them to the homeless shelter, or we're going to save water in our bathrooms and how that affects the school in which we live. So they become a sense, they have a sense of community and being able to contribute to and make a difference in the family and the school, which then leads into being productive citizens or into their career and what they contribute to the world. So the nature is a very important part of that, being able to make a difference.
You know, I asked a question about this a little bit earlier, and so pardon me if this is kind of similar, but there's been an emphasis by smart growth advocates over the years for towns and new developments to become more urbanized and more densely settled. You could argue that may potentially cut off kids and adults from the outdoors, and obviously that's not the healthiest thing. So unless you've got a Balboa or a Griffith Park nearby, or you know, a really great urban park like Point Defiance or Stanley Park up in Vancouver, how can those ideas of more densely populated cities be brought together with the need to make sure people are able to get outside? Is it a matter of having like a good bus that can take you out to the forest or something like that?
I think it's a matter of realizing that nature is all around us. It could be in your front yard. It could be in the you could plant a tree in your front yard. My street is becoming, everyone's taking out their trees and people aren't putting them back in again. What would it be like if you had a shade tree or a couple fruit trees in your front yard or your backyard? Like I said, almost the nature is so accessible here in San Diego. We've looked at schools, and about 60% of the schools are within a 10-minute walk from the school. A school is within a 10-minute walk of a canyon or open space. So that could be your phys ed time and then your time in nature. And by going repeatedly, once a season, once a month, doing various activities, the children have a chance to learn in nature the same things they learn in a classroom, but it's a much richer environment. And they might be looking at science, they might be doing writing, they might be doing observational skills, they might be doing role playing, any number of things that they could do in their classroom, they can also do in nearby nature. And so not every city is quite as blessed, but every city benefits from those urban trees. It benefits from those pocket parks. Balboa Park is not your neighborhood park, but Black Mountain Open Space is near me. Penasquitos, Tecolote is probably within 10-minute walk of probably 100,000 people if you look at it. So nearby nature is affordable and accessible, and in this economy, it's one of the gifts that we have that we can go and rediscover and make part of our lives.
I'm a critic of extreme sports for some of the reasons I mentioned in the introduction. It seems to value conquering nature over being comfortable being a part of nature. But I'm wondering if I am overstating the negative here. Is this a bad trend? Because people are still getting outdoors with extreme sports after all. Certainly that's going to have some kind of effect. Am I wrong? Am I right?
I would tend to lean more toward you being right, particularly with younger children. There's a big difference between being in nature and playing with nature. So what I mean by that is, to me, if we have our children, my boys, in organized sports, so they're out, they're playing soccer, that's not unstructured time in nature. That's not connecting and being one with nature and being comfortable, like you say, being comfortable in nature. It's outside, and that's certainly better than sitting inside doing nothing or, you know, clicking the buttons on the video device. However, engaging with nature, just like a child needs to be able to take apart a radio at some point to really understand it and see how it works, kids need to experience and engage themselves with nature. They need to touch and smell and feel and break. And there's going to be some destruction involved in that. but not by means, in my opinion, of the extreme sports. I think
not
that's
maliciously.
Very different. Correctly, not maliciously, although it feels like that sometimes from a six-year-old. You know, they're going to kick the ant hill every once in a while and break off a branch, but that's part of really learning to understand and therefore eventually appreciate and respect and take care of.
When I look at the issues, particularly as they pertain to trails, you know, you have your motorized and then you have your non-motorized. Non-motorized, you have equestrian, hiking, and you have mountain biking, typically. Those are the three. And I wouldn't say that I consider any of them extreme. Obviously, mountain biking on a trail is different than downhill mountain biking, which is more, I think, in line with what you're referring to as extreme, where you're going exceptionally fast, and with that speed, you get erosion and stuff of the trails and so forth like that. So in that, so to separate them, that's extreme. Downhill mountain biking is extreme. Mountain biking on a single track, I wouldn't consider that extreme. And then motorized, again, yeah, they have their place out there. They want more, but I do know that we all need to just sort of get along. And that's the most important thing.
Well, from a recreation standpoint, the sports, extreme sports have so much bringing from people the adrenaline, the speed, the noise. So we dealt with this as the Forest Service, is that we would say mixed-use trails, but you can't necessarily mix these uses with someone who wants to bird watch or have reflective time or solitude or dark sky. Many of these extreme sports actually started in Southern California, so they're more in our face here than they might be in Iowa or Minnesota or whatever. And so we see them more sharply here. And I think we also have, as Janice said, people are manipulating the environment as opposed to using it to fish or hunt in ways that are more integral, where the human is a participant with the environment as opposed to using it as a physical place to put your speed or your downhillness or your relationship to this machine that you're using.
Family Adventures in Nature is an example of a family nature club, and one of the biggest benefits of family nature clubs is they help people overcome most of the barriers that there are to getting out in nature, be it the culture of fear, their safety in numbers, both with natural predators and man-made predators. It helps people get more of a balance on the calendar because there are things that are scheduled for them. Another common thing that we hear a lot is, yeah, I've been here for 20 years and I didn't know this even existed. And we're talking about Mission Trails Regional Park.
Right.
You know, from that to just to the local canyons, we really take people all over the county and give a lot of opportunities for people to get out. So varying schedules and so forth are met in that way. Our Family Nature Club is completely free. There's no membership fee. The only fee that you would ever come across is if there's, on occasion, we'll have a parking fee.
And that's familyadventuresinnature.org for more information.
Correct.
And Anne, if you would talk a little bit about the San Diego Children and Nature Collaborative.
The San Diego group started in January 2009 after Richard Louv gave a lecture at Point Loma Nazarene about Last Child in the Woods. And individuals from more than 50 organizations have participated. We meet bi-monthly. We have a board. We have committees. And our mission is to inspire others and ourselves to nurture, empower, and engage youth in cultivating their relationship with nature. So we're really a facilitative, collaborative group. There are many, many in San Diego who provide nature education, and we think that by working together, we can increase the public awareness much more, and we can also provide more opportunities for children to have nature experiences where they're already gathered. So their after-school programs, their church groups, their classrooms, their preschools. So how can we help by bringing the nature education knowledge or naturalists in to help children have more activities in those settings? We also support schools' abilities to connect children to nearby nature, and that would be providing naturalist guides for teachers to walk nearby. They don't always have to get on a bus to go. And then also encouraging us to have schoolyard habitats or school gardens in each school again, even this economy will allow us to do that. It's relatively low cost to be able to have a schoolyard habitat and tend that, or to take a walk to your nearby nature. It's a partnership, and we're working with the community groups, whether they're environmental groups, health groups, school groups, PTAs, corporations like Adventure 16. It's to raise the opportunities for children throughout our community. It's really a form of social change so that we get the benefits for children and adults to spend time in nature.
And this is a regional movement under the Children and Nature
Network. The national organization is called the Children and Nature Network.
And that's sdchildrenandnature.org.
That's our local group. Thank you.
sdchildrenandnature.org. Anne, Janice, Dave, great having you in today. And as usual, doing this program, I wind up learning just a great deal, and what a great conversation. And I hope you all can come back again sometime and we can talk more about this. This is a terrific topic. So thank you all that you're doing to increase the awareness of the outdoors for kids and the communities that they're in, too. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Tommy. Thanks for having us.
That's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International. Thanks once again to our guests, Dr. Anne Fegging, the co-founder and chair of the San Diego Children and Nature Collaborative, Janice Swaysgood, the co-founder of Family Adventures in Nature, and David McDonald, the founder and president of the Adventure 16 Donate a Pack Foundation. Now, the website for the San Diego Children and Nature Collaborative, that is sdchildrenandnature.org. www.sdchildrenandnature.org. The website for Family Adventures in Nature is familyadventuresinnature.org. familyadventuresinnature.org. And the website for the Adventure 16 Donate a Pack Foundation is donateapack.org. That's www.donateapack.org. You can also access the Donate a Pack Foundation via the Adventure 16 website at adventure16.com. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media, and as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, you can email me at tommy@fm949sd.com. And for more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, go to the Tree Huggers International website at treehuggersintl.com. That's treehuggersintl.com. You can also access the Tree Huggers International page via the FM 94.9 website at www.fm949sd.com. Also, find Tree Huggers International on Twitter and Facebook, and our Twitter address is at treehuggersintl. Tree Huggers International content is now also available on iTunes. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International from the studios of KBZT, FM 94.9 in San Diego. We'll be back same time next Sunday morning with another take on natural science and environmental affairs as we continue our mission to preserve parks, wilderness, and special places on Tree Huggers International. Thanks for making us a part of your Sunday morning, and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Be well.